Are you ready for the weekend yet? We have events, news, and a guest for you to enjoy this Lake Life weekend. Hello and welcome to the second episode of our Lake Life Weekend podcast. Thanks for joining in, either for the first time or the second time, even better. And we are again here from coming from Lake 7 this weekend. We are working on a studio, in fact, in Perm, and we have been recording in Detroit Lakes and in Virgus already. So we are moving around Lakes country. And yeah, what a nice weekend this was. And it's getting better. Ice off the lakes, everything is blue, and actually the grass is already pretty green, surprisingly. I'm really surprised how fast that goes. So lakes country summer times ahead. I think you're all excited. Cabin fever, I believe you can't wait to open up the season here. And maybe everybody's coming this coming weekend. We have Easter weekend, so probably a longer weekend and very inviting to enjoy at the lakes. And if you're into Easter egg hunts, I'm sure you have really good locations on the property that you own or that you visit. I know Harry has really a blast. He's 8 and he actually still thinks the Easter bunny hid everything. It's kind of cute. He's not listening to me right now, so I'm leaving him in this belief. And yeah, it's nice. So yeah, good weekend ahead. And I'm sure you all had a good weekend past weekend. And I want to start this off with, we're going to have a guest speaker today, Nathan Olson from the DNR, who's speaking about the fishery in Detroit Lakes there at Dunton Locks. It's a park and they have a hatchery there. It's really cool. So stay tuned. And I was going to go into some news here and share a couple of highlights from our road trip that we did this weekend as well. So yeah, not so good news. Road work ahead and Pelican Lake property owners, 20% of this year's road budget for Ottertail County is going towards the reconstruction of the roads along the northwest and west side of Pelican Lake. Well, that's actually good news because they're improving them. Unfortunately, this is a major reconstruction and the project will take the full season to complete. So I guess we will have some obstacles, but in the long run, I think we can all be happy about that. So yeah, another thing that we found, which was really cool, you probably know from your homes, it's a nationwide movement, I think, those little pop-up, libraries, where you can bring a book and take a book and look like little birdhouses, I find, colored birdhouses in front of the yards. There's one in Frazee now, Frazee pop-up library. Frazee's first pop-up library will be available this Saturday near the Yak Shack located in downtown. And I think that's really neat because when you go to your lake and you're done with your book and you realize, I should have brought a new one. Now you can just swing over to Frazee, maybe visit the caterers there at the meat market and trade a book to have a new read at the cabin. I thought that was kind of a nice find. And I was going to actually tell about you a little road trip that we did, and that will actually lead us past this other news that we have here from Lida Green's golf course by Pelican Rapids. Are you up? Do you like road trips? I really love road trips, and my son loves road trips as well. We actually took opportunity with this nice weather this past Sunday, and what I really like, the roads are really empty in the morning. Nobody's around. And we started off here from Lake 7, went to Perham actually, where we're going to be recording this in the future to drop off some tools because we're still working on that shop. And then we head down. Now I took a map actually to. How did we do that? God, it was beautiful. So we went down 78 and we actually looked at a little property by Rush Lake. It's all flooded, wasn't really good on Highway 14. Then we went back. We went through Richville on Highway 14. It's just nice and curvy and just picturesque hills. So Highway 14, Richville, Highway 14 down to, how did we do this? 32? Now I'm lost. Dang it. But the goal was, that's embarrassing, isn't it? The goal was Phelps Mill. That's really one of my favorite spots. If you haven't been there, I'm going to speak about that in the future too. Phelps Mill is a little historic site, I would say. It has a beautiful park. The water is just brushing through there because of all the melt. It used to be a old mill, flour mill, and it's a little museum. It's open. Unfortunately, it was closed yet. It opens May 1st, and Harry and I, we go there, I don't know, every other month, and he just loves it. We climb it from the top to the bottom, and it's always interesting to look at all those old machinery. I can just recommend it with a family trip or just a trip by yourself with a convertible or a standard car, or if you're a biker. It's just awesome. And then we head back, and that's my favorite part. So we go on 41, 45. It's not on here, but you pass Star Lake eventually, and then you just jump on 108, and you go on the north side of Maplewood State Park, and then you pass Lake Lyder and South Lyder. You pretty much drive between two lakes. It's just awesome. And when you look to the right, you have this island with this big log home on it. And then you have, I don't know, almost a mile or 2 miles just shoreline road. It's just really beautiful. Really beautiful. And then we went north. I think, again, that's, it was 230th or something. Then we hit County Highway 4. And then we went east again back to Virgus. And then we had lunch at Loon's Nest. Yep, I think you can find us there almost every other week for a burger. The little waitresses, they always know what we eat. Do you need a menu? No, we don't. And they already know what we're eating. And my son eats extra pickles. I don't know, your children probably all eat extra pickles here. They love them for some reason. I don't really like pickles, but he can eat a whole jar if I let him. Yeah, anyways, but we passed Lyda Greens. And what we read about Lyda Greens, the golf course there, it's in Pelican Rapids, they noticed a trend for people being short on time. Yeah, we all are a little short on time and money, actually, to play the normal 9 or 18 holes. And they are building an additional 5 holes. So they have a 9-hole course, and then they add another 5 to be completed soon. And then they have 14 holes to play. And then you can actually play 5, 9, 10, 14, or 18 holes as you wish. So you can kind of golf a la carte, and this is a pretty new concept to the nation. It has popped up here and there, and they are incorporating it in the local area, which I thought was really interesting. And they're also adding a flying golf game, which I haven't discovered yet what that meant, and I didn't ask when I stopped today, but they just opened yesterday, and I will actually interview the owner. It's a third generation owner now taking over, the son of the current owner. And I thought we will have him in an interview section sometime later, maybe in May, to speak about the golf course and the history and what they're doing there. So, yeah, that was our road trip. Some news and events coming up this Easter. If you want to spend, there's an Easter buffet at the Holiday Inn on the lake. I suggest reservations to be made Sunday. And there's also, there's something. There's Alexa Anderson will be playing live music at Spanky's here on Rose Lake from 7:30 to 9 on Saturday the 15th of April. So, yeah, it's just a little bit of things going on this weekend. I guess we all celebrate them rather close together. And one thing I miss actually over Easter, we're in Germany, we are doing Easter fires. I have never really seen that happening here, despite the fact that we have a strong German descent or heritage here, I would say, in Minnesota. And I don't know if you've heard of it, but traditionally the farmers, and we're such a farm community here, so on a field we gather together, and they put so much shrub and trees up. So the Easter fire, maybe you want to Google it, Google for pictures. They are like as big as a house, and usually like the whole township comes together. The fire station people are close by as well, actually. And it's more of a community event, as far as I remember. And I know in the bigger cities they don't do it, but in the rural areas, they really celebrate Easter in the beginning, I would say, here. I mean, on a historical Christian background, but like also maybe the beginning of everything. So it may be actually a little bit more of a Germanic culture. I'm not even sure if it has to do anything with Christianity. I should have Googled that before too, huh? Well, maybe something to Google for all of us. But I like the Easter fire. We call it Easter fire tradition. And maybe I should just start one. If you see a big smoking something this weekend, then maybe you know who that was. Okay. Well, after all those events, news, and little updates here from Lake 7, I would like to lead that into our interview today, a little bit longer with Nathan, but really good insights. And here we go. Ah, now I almost forgot. Sorry, and I have to squeeze this in. This weekend, ongoing, the DNR is catching walleye and getting the egg to make the fry for seedlings, fingerlings, and all the fish that they put out in the lakes around the area. So you'll learn all about that from Nathan. And also, I would like to mention on our website, www.lakelifeweekend.com, you find all news in full length, stories and all events at your fingertips. So you cannot only listen to this podcast, but you also have all the events and information, news on our website, lakelifeweekend.com. Now, enjoy Nathan also. Yeah, welcome. I have with me here Nathan Olsen. He's from the DNR and the local Detroit Lakes Fisheries Office. And I have met with Nathan a little while back at some different occasions, and I'm glad he joined us today to speak about what the DNR does. And I would like Nathan to introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, I came here in probably 2013, so it's going on about 4 years that I've been in this office, and I'm the area fisheries supervisor, and so I deal mostly with fisheries, but in our office we also have wildlife staff and some ecological and water resources staff as well.
Okay, before we come to learn about the DNR and organization, you said you came 2013. Where did you come from?
Well, I've been with the DNR since 2004, so it's going on 13 years this year. Mm-hmm. And I originally started as a fisheries, they call us a fisheries specialist in the metro, so down in the cities, and I worked there for 2 years. Before I got my position with the DNR, I grew up in South Dakota. I do have ties to Minnesota. My grandparents grew up, or were from Wilmer, so okay. South of here. So we were coming to Minnesota frequently. Most of my family lives in Minnesota. But since I grew up in South Dakota, my first degree was at South Dakota State University in Wildlife and Fisheries Sciences. Mm-hmm. So that was a bachelor's degree. And then from there, I went to Montana State University in Bozeman for my master's in Fish and Wildlife Management. So
You have a master's degree?
Yep. And at least from the fisheries biologist standpoint, the general consensus is if you want to be competitive in the job market, you're going to need some degree beyond just a bachelor's. I do know some people that do get a decent job in natural resources with just a bachelor's degree, but for the most part, if you can at least get that master's degree, that really helps be competitive in the job market that exists today. So.
Well, it's also good to know, in fact, because you are a talent and you're an educated worker, because the quality then comes to the job. So I understand the master program is relevant. That's actually a good thing.
Yeah, and even though I was going to school in Montana, I was actually doing a research project in Nebraska. So okay. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to spend the great summers in Montana. Most of the time I was in the southern part of Nebraska near the Kansas border. Doing most of my field work. So by the time you get out of school with a master's degree, you've really been doing biological work, and you can kind of transition right into a position pretty well. Because you can imagine my boss, so to say, was in Montana, but I was doing all my work in Nebraska, so I had to be pretty self-sufficient, which helped me in getting a good job with the DNR.
Interesting. Like, just curious now that you spoke about it, how many graduates, or how big are those schools or those classes, those graduate years? How many people are finishing a degree every year in the United States, roughly?
Well, if you look at just South Dakota State, there's a lot of people that go there to get their bachelor's, and you're probably looking at a class size, at least just within that program, of probably 30 to 40 people.
Mm-hmm.
They have expanded their program a little bit now since I've left. Obviously, it's been a few years. And obviously, there's not a lot of people that get a job in natural resources, just like any other position. You know, a lot of people get degrees and they can't find something and they do something else. But once you get up into that graduate level, that master's degree, you're probably only looking at maybe 10 to 15 people in the program.
In that school.
You know, so it's hard to say nationally, but there definitely is a lot of competition for natural resource positions. You know,
There's
a lot of people that want to do the job. It doesn't always pay the best, but at least you're outdoors most of the time in most of those positions. Once you do get up into the higher level, you know, like I'm a supervisor now, so I probably spend less time in the outdoors and more time dealing with personnel and dealing with people. Then it can get a little daunting and stuff, but for the most part, it's still a really great job. And so there's a lot of people that want to be there because you're outside, you know. So
I like to hear, because I'm fearing that too many people are just always after a money return in a job. So you, there's not the most money, that's irrelevant. So that triggers my question. Since when do you know that you rather want to spend your life working outside than making a lot of money, like on a stock market? Or?
Well, I mean, I think I was very fortunate. You know, growing up in South Dakota, it's not like we had a ton of water. It's not like Minnesota, but we did have a few lakes, and my dad loved to fish, and so we probably fished almost every weekend. And so I grew up being very outdoorsy.
Mm-hmm.
I liked a lot of biology, but I'm going to tell you the truth. When I came out of high school, I had no clue. You know, it wasn't like I had said I want to be an area fishery supervisor in Minnesota. I had no clue what the jobs were. I just knew that South Dakota State had a good program because that's what the recruiters told me.
Don't say it's people, it seems.
So yeah, I mean, and so I think I was very naive when I came out of high school, and I just so happens I got lucky. I went to South Dakota State, but I went through the same thing I think a lot of freshman students do, where you're sitting there questioning your career path and why am I sitting here spending a ton of dollars and I'm not even taking any courses that pertain to this. And then you add on top of that, we did have one freshman entry-level course for wildlife and fishery sciences, and the professor was very straight with us. He said, you will not make a lot of money in this position. You're gonna have to fight tooth and nail to get a job. You know, you might have to move around the country looking, you know, working many different jobs, getting a lot of experience before you can land a full-time position.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was pretty scared as a freshman, but luckily I had some work study, and I got involved with a graduate student, and he needed someone to sit in the lab and pick bugs out of plants. And so that's what I did. I, you know, after classes, I was there counting bugs, identifying bugs, and it clicked. It was like, actually, I'm using what I'm learning and applying it. And that hooked me right there.
Mm.
And so then I stuck with it. And so it was almost pure luck. Really, that it came at an important time that I was able to find this graduate student who needed help in the lab. And from there, it morphed into he needed someone in the summer. And so then I worked during the summer netting fish and counting fish and doing stuff like that. And then it just kept morphing into people needing more positions. And by the time I was done with my undergrad, I'd already published two papers. And I knew what I was getting myself into with grad school, so I really wasn't too scared of what was going on. And so by the time I was done with my undergrad, I knew where I was going and what I was trying to achieve, which I had no clue when I got out of high school where I was going and what I was doing. So it's weird, and it's anybody that's looking that's, you know, either a freshman in high school or, you know, a senior in high school, whatever, job shadow, learn about the position, talk to people that are doing the job, and actually figure out what it took for them to get there, because I had no clue. And it just happened to, it luckily it all worked out for me, but I could see where a lot of people get frustrated.
So we learn, just it's interesting for the younger audience, passion, ambition, flexibility, meaning like your passion to the not the product but to bugs and fish,
yep.
and to the to the tools, and then ambition, you would publish two papers, so hard work. And then flexibility, we heard South Dakota, Montana, and you mentioned that you did exhibitions to Nebraska, or
yep,
projects in Nebraska, and now Minnesota, so a lot of, at least four states, a minimum. And Minnesota, you said you were in St. Paul, this Twin Cities?
Yeah, so after kind of figuring out all my schooling, luckily I was able to land my first full-time position right out of school with the DNR, and it was down in the metro. We were based out of Eden Prairie at the time,
mm-hmm,
and the way that the cities are structured, there's a fishery station on the west side of the cities, and there's a fishery station on the east side of the cities, but there's also a regional office, and there's the central office, which, you know, basically the central office is the base for the whole state of Minnesota down there. So for the most part, I just focused on the western part of the cities.
They actually have a fisheries office and they breed fish there?
We don't have a hatchery. There is a hatchery in St. Paul, though, in the eastern.
Really?
Yep, right by the Mississippi River. But for our office, it's pretty much you're managing all the fisheries within a 3 or 4 county area. So Scott County, Carver County, and Hennepin County. So you're still going out and evaluating fish populations, making sure that there's no regulations needed, and just monitoring those fisheries to make sure that they're sustainable for the future.
Okay, so what's happening in Detroit Lakes? Like, what are we doing? What are you doing exactly for us?
Oh, there's so much going on. You know, we're kind of in the middle of a transition right now.
Okay.
You can see that there's still ice in the lakes.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, there's still almost 19 inches of ice still sitting out there. So, but even though that there's ice, we are still gearing up for our spring season. And the biggest thing that we have going on soon will be the walleye egg take at the Lake Sally Hatchery over there by Dunlocks County Park.
And that's usually in the first half of April, depending on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, it usually, well, our magic formula is telling us maybe April 12th is the start date. But it all depends on the fish and what they want. Even though, let's say we even had like last year, for example, we had a very early ice out. We were up and running pretty much about this time last year. We were starting to build the trap, and we were starting to get stuff into the lake. And we started taking eggs towards the end of March, which is a record early season for us. But then it got cold on us too, and that really shut down the fish, and it ended up having an egg take season of about 23 days, which is one of the longest that we've ever seen.
Oh,
and we don't want that, Dirk. We want to wait for the fish to, you know, to be ready and get our fish basically within, you know, 7 days or so.
Okay.
So.
But what happens? Like, I mean, maybe not everybody knows that you're doing mm-hmm. this. So we have a hatchery here locally, meaning you capture egg, fertilize them, and then you breed fish to what happens with the little ones?
Well, then, so we have So we have our trap right at so Muskrat, the water is coming through the Pelican River, it flows through Detroit Lake, it goes into Muskrat Lake, and then it dumps into Sally. And right at that location between Muskrat and Sally, it's just like the song almost,
mm-hmm.
we install a trap to capture those fish as they migrate up the river. And once we have the fish in the trap, then we separate them by female or male, and then we determine whether the females are ready to release their eggs or not. The ones that are ready, then we just squeeze the eggs out of them, and then we also squeeze sperm out of the males, and then we fertilize the eggs, and then we just bring them right up to the hatchery. Usually within about 20 days after they're fertilized and on the hatchery, that's when they hatch.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they hatch, they're called walleye fry, and they're about the size of a mosquito.
Mm.
And at at one point of the a time during this whole process, we'll probably have about 36 million eggs in this hatchery. So we have... It's kind of a stressful deal. So we have night watchmen, 24-hour watch to make sure the water keeps flowing.
Oh, really?
Yep. We also have alarm systems to tell us whether or not the water stops flowing.
What's the facility look like? Is it big aquariums, big tanks? Or what is that?
It's probably about the size of a 20x20 garage. And then imagine about 3 tanks set up in different rows.
Okay.
And then water is flowing from the top of those tanks, and it just keeps cascading down.
Ah.
And then we also
like
have
a stair.
Yep, like a stair step kind of thing. And then on those tanks, we have these jars
mm-hmm.
that are all lined up. And the water flows into the jars, and then it just, by gravity, it flows out of the jar and into these big tanks, into these troughs. Uh-huh. And so as the eggs sit there and turn with the water and they start to hatch, the fry just naturally just follow the flow of the water into those tanks and all the way through our plumbing into a bigger tank where all the fry just magically appear.
In another tank, though.
In another tank. Nope, not outside. This is all in. This is all inside our garage. Yep. Mm-hmm. And we have enough space then for trucks to come in. So if you're really having a lot of hatching going on, we can easily shell out 2 million to 3 million fry in a day. And so we've got people that, you know, we have other stations that come and get eggs or get fry from us. And so we need to have a place for them to come with their trucks so we can load out all of those fry. Mm-hmm. The fry either go to lakes for fishing. Some lakes do very well with walleye fry and maintaining the walleye population. And so we stock some lakes with walleye fry. Some of the other ones, they go to walleye rearing ponds, is what, like natural wetlands around the area.
As a little fry.
As a little fry, the size of a mosquito.
Okay.
And so what we do is if you ever camped and you have those water jug bags, you know, they're like collapsible bags that you can stick water in.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of those, and we stick about 75,000 fry per bag, depending on how far you're traveling. Sometimes it might be as low as 50,000 fry per bag. And so we have all these bags, and so you just know how many fry are going into a lake or a pond, and then you just put so many bags together, and then all you do is you drive there, either dump them in out of a boat, or you just drive them right next to the lake on the shoreline and stock them right there.
And can I do that in my lake, or who's doing it now?
Well, it's obviously it's only DNR staff that are doing it, and it's based off of, for people's lakes, there should be a lake management plan that outlines what they'll get for their lake for stocking. And sometimes for us to determine what works best, it's all been just over the years we've tried different things. Sometimes we've tried fry, sometimes we've tried fry at different rates, you know, different abundances in your lake. And then we monitor that through time. So just because you stick in a fry now doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to catch them next year or something, you know. So we monitor these for maybe several years. It might take, by the time a walleye is really susceptible to our nets to tell us whether they survived, it's usually about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So we stock them, and usually we try to have some sort of monitoring plan, you know, 3 years down the road to see whether that worked. And so it takes a long time for you to determine whether or not a stocking worked, because in our area, we have over 100 lakes that we're trying to manage and work with. And so at best, we're probably getting to every one of these lakes 5 years. Every 5 years, we're going in and doing some sort of netting.
How do you do that then now? No, wait a second. A couple of questions. So there's a lot of info. I don't know if anyone can follow. I think it's fascinating. So your area is 100 lakes. Are we in Becker County only then? Because I think we have like 400 lakes in the radius of 25 miles. How does that go now?
No, we only have, our management area consists of Becker, Manoman, Clay, Norman, Polk, and Red Lake counties. And so most of our lakes are in Becker and Manoman counties. We do not focus on Otter Tail County. That is the Fergus Falls Fisheries Office. So.
Okay.
And when I say that many lakes, there's obviously many more, but these are lakes that have a public access where the state can actually spend time and effort and money managing those lakes.
Okay, so we have 100 managed lakes.
Yes.
And of course we have many more. Okay, got that. And then 5 years and netting. So if I look at a lake, how are you going to net a lake? How are you doing that?
It's something that's been developed through time, and starting in about the mid-90s, we've had certain stations that we always repeat every 5 years. So the idea is, if you stick a net in the same location roughly the same time of year, then you'll get a trend of what the fish population will do. And so it's not necessarily us saying that there's, you know, X number of walleyes in there. We don't,
like statistic, like calling 100 people and then making a projection over the pop.
So a lot of these lakes might have at least 10, 20, almost 30 years of netting history that we can look at. And so we can compare what the fish population was this year to what it was maybe in the 50s or 60s, you know. So it's it's basically relative abundance, you know. So we're just looking at general trends. And so, you know, we're assuming then that if the walleyes were really abundant in Lake X, then they would have been really abundant in your nets.
Yeah.
And if the walleye population declines, then you would see less of those fish in your nets 20 years later or something like that. And so that's the really simplified way of explaining it. And there's not just nets that we use. We also can use electrofishing. Certain fish species do not sample well with nets, largemouth bass being one of those. They just seem to know where the nets are. They're very net shy. Mm-hmm. And so we have to go in and we actually electrofish them, which is just like it sounds. We're putting electric current in the water. It stuns the fish. We net them. We can measure, weigh them, do whatever we want, and then we can release them back. It's just like being like a stun gun, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then, I mean, then there's seining. There's all sorts of other techniques you can use. But probably... that's a big part of our summer is once June rolls around, I've got two crews, you know, on two different lakes every week all the way through almost all of August. And so for June, July, and August, we're trying to get to as many of these lakes as possible.
For the data,
yep.
For the research,
yep.
The statistics.
Yep.
Okay.
And each lake takes roughly a week, you know, so
okay.
It's...
Speaking of outdoors, they camp there then?
No, I mean, well, if you were to work, you know, in the far northeast
yeah.
where they have a lot of lakes, like in the Boundary Waters area, then they do.
Really?
They'll hike in with their canoes and stuff, and they'll
wow.
do all the work. Luckily, well, it depends on who you are, but for us, we usually can drive to the lake
yeah,
each
yeah,
day
yeah.
and launch with a boat.
I was trying to make a joke, but actually,
but no, there are those people though that
wow.
they, you know, you got to go where the resource is,
yeah.
you know. So
fascinating. Okay, so now that's also interesting. So we are approaching spring. We're in spring, let's say, and then we have the hatchery period. Right after that, what is it, June-ish, you release?
Yeah, we'll we
then
usually start.
Net?
Yeah, so we'll start. We'll stock the fry usually in middle of May, end of May, just depending on when the fry were or when the eggs were harvested. And so, like I said, we'll stock those fry into certain lakes. And then we also stock some of those fry into these walleye ponds. We talk them, and
oh.
the intent is to grow those fish into about 5 or 6 inch long walleye fingerlings.
Fingerlings.
Yep. So bigger walleyes, you
yep.
know. And so again, we know certain lakes do really good with fry, and that's great because it's really easy and it's much cheaper for us to just use fry in those lakes because all you're doing is taking the eggs and hatching them, and then you just drive them to the lake and you're done. But some lakes do better with walleye fingerlings, the bigger size fingerlings.
Mm.
But that takes much more work because now we have to take them to the pond and stock them as fry. And then in the fall, so coming around after our netting season during
mm-hmm.
the summer, so starting in September, October, November, then we have to go back to those ponds and we have to get more nets to capture those fish out of those ponds as much as we can.
For the fingerlings now.
For the fingerlings, yep.
So that happens in the fall. So, we have
so that happens in the fall. Yep.
And then you release them still before
and then,
winter?
Yep, and then we try to get those into lakes. We have certain pounds that go into each lake, depending on what we've seen in the past, and also statewide averages or statewide understanding of what works in a lot of these lakes. And so each lake gets a certain number of pounds, and so we have a list of all the lakes that need to have fish in them. And so that's what we do for almost all the fall, is to try to get out there and get walleyes out of these ponds so we can put them into the lakes where the fingerlings do best.
So there's always this walleye thing and I'm obviously not I actually used to fish a lot when I was 14 15 16 I guess. Now I fish a little bit again with my little son, but so here everybody's after the walleye. I know it tastes good and I like it too. So now you focus on walleye too, and do you release them so that we can catch them again? So what's actually the mission? So the people want the walleye, and you adapt to the consumer calling, the residents saying like, hey, we want walleye, and you're giving them walleye?
Yeah, we have, it is a state fish. And so ultimately we're trying to provide a fishery for people. There's a lot of lakes in our area that are not, the walleyes do not reproduce on their own, and they would not exist unless we put them there.
Okay.
And so we are trying to go through an evaluation now of what works best in certain lakes. You know, for example, if we've been stocking double the number of fish and we haven't seen any return to that, we may be looking at reducing those efforts just because they cost a lot of money to
mm-hmm.
do that. But where the stocking works really well, we have no plans of stopping that. So it is trying to give people the opportunity to catch fish, the state fish.
Mm-hmm.
We know that a lot of people fish for them, and it's always an excitement for people to to catch walleye. Mm-hmm. You know, if you talk to someone, they're like, yeah, we caught a lot of bluegills, crappies, but I caught this walleye. And it's just like, this makes people's day.
Yeah, you know?
But I do want people to understand that a lot of the lakes in our area are known as bass, panfish type lakes. Yeah. That's what they do really good with. And naturally, that's kind of our baby is, mm-hmm. you know, we have really good panfish fishing here. And when I say panfish, I'm talking about crappies, bluegills, or sunnies, mm-hmm. people call them. And so we do as much as we can to get walleye out there and provide that as an opportunity. But a lot of times it doesn't matter how many fish you stick into these lakes, Dirk. They're not going to be, you know, lake of the woods walleye type fishing. That's just not the way it happens. I wish it was that easy where, you know, put more fish in, you get more fish out. But a lot of times that's just not, that's not the case, especially from what we've seen on a lot of different lakes.
Okay, me as a non-fisher, now you lake of the woods and all that. So that's interesting to me now. The walleye is not really reproducing that itself so well, so we need to help a little bit so that everybody can catch it. But is there certain lakes in Minnesota, because obviously it's the state fish, so there must be some history to it. Where is the walleye pure and natural? In what lake? And reproducing and actually, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. And we'll just, specifically here in our fisheries area, we do have, there are some, like for example, Big Cormorant. Big Cormorant, White Earth Lake, and Island Lake in Becker County here are all natural walleye fisheries. We do not stock at all. They function very well on their own. But we do have plans or contingency plans in the lake management plan in case something happens where those walleye populations are not able to sustain themselves. So let's say, for example, in 10 years from now, we're just seeing the walleye are not reproducing, something happened to them. We may then go in and put at least one trial stocking just to try to boost that population to bring it back. But for now, they've been doing great. So those three lakes are sort of our core walleye lakes in this area. That's Big Cormorant Island here in Becker County and White Earth Lake. Mm-hmm. But we do see some sporadic walleye spawning on some other lakes, but it's never going to be enough to where people could go out and consistently catch a fish.
Hmm. Well, I think that was really all very interesting info here. So, but before we close this, tell us a little bit more about where are you located?
Yeah, so yep. So our office is over on Dunlocks, near Dunlocks County Park. That's where most people know it as. When they say, where are you at? I say, you know where Dunlocks is? Oh, yeah. And then we're right by there. We have a couple buildings there. We're open during normal business hours, 8 to 4:30. And again, we have wildlife staff there. We have forestry staff. We have some ecological and water resources staff. And so if you have questions about if you're looking at doing something on your shoreline, or we do have foresters there to help you if you have large tracts of land and you're looking at writing a forestry management plan for that. You know, if you're looking at doing some forest harvest, we have staff there that can help you. So if you really want to sit down and talk to someone specifically about something, please call our office and make an appointment just to make sure that someone's around, because we are a field office and those people a lot of times are in the field. And so we can't always guarantee that someone's there that you want to talk to just out of the blue, but it's best to make an appointment.
And on the DNR websites, we find the location, phone numbers,
yep.
All that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, just for our phone number to start with, 218-846-8290. That's the fisheries main line, but mm-hmm. they can ship it off to whoever you want to talk to.
Yeah, and you also have informational, like you have little booklets and brochures to hand out for
guidelines, we have all, yeah, but if you're, we're still waiting on the fishing regulations for this year to come out. We had some issues with our printer. I guess the person that got the contract, something fell through. But we have regulation booklets. We do not sell licenses there, though. We get that a lot, where people want to come in and buy a license, and they just don't like these satellite offices out here to handle money. And so, please, if you're looking at a license, go to some other vendor in the city. If you're looking at regulation booklets or some of these forestry management booklets, mm-hmm. we've got a ton of stuff that we can hand out to people.
Yeah. No, I've been there. I've seen it. It's really nice, and you have very impressive offices there and good staff. I met. Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
Well, I would add that it, you know, all of the work that we do can only be done by, it's all paid by user fees, you know, and so I'm sure, I don't know when this will air or when this will go out, but we are looking at a license fee increase, and I think that people should know about that too.
Okay.
And that's basically because the fund that we use to pay for all this is slowly declining as inflation catches up to that fund. And so every 5 or 6 years or so, we've got to ask for a license fee increase just to reset the.
So the DNR is solely financed through the license.
There's a large percentage of ours is all user fees. There's a very small amount that gets dedicated from the general fund from the legislature. But if you look at fishing, for example, all the work we do is pretty much just license fee dollars.
Okay.
Other money that might come in is all usually dedicated to certain projects. We do have some habitat projects that we'll be doing this spring, and that's all other money from like sales tax dollars and other means. But the general run of the mill, like, hey, what's going on with my lake, the stocking, all the general operations is all funded by when you buy your fishing license.
Well, I think that makes total sense.
Yeah.
We cannot expect everything to be free. And I think for, I never thought that my, what is it, $13, $17, I don't even know, $47, I don't know what my license is, I forgot, but it seems very reasonable for all the efforts and preservation and stocking that is been done by the DNR. So I think that's a great return as a resident for me, that I actually should own a license no matter what, just to have the lakes being protected and managed. I think that's for the future very relevant. So yeah, I totally.
Yeah, when you look at other entertainment, even if you go to a movie, you can't go to a movie, you know, depending on how many people you have, but even if you just go with my wife and I or something like that, that's basically my license fee for the whole year for fishing, you know. So I just want people to evaluate, look over what the proposal is, and, you know, if you're supportive, then just let us know. So so hopefully we, you know, we're a one staff person down right now in our office, and we won't be hiring that person until we know and get a better idea of what the budget picture will look like in the future.
Okay, okay. Well, that was great information. Thank you very much for coming
out. Yeah, no problem.
Nathan.
Yep.
And I think we will be hearing more from the DNR on a quarterly basis with updates, maybe seasonal. We haven't figured that out yet, but we are really interested to have this great dialogue with the DNR. If you have questions, you heard the phone number, you can Google the DNR, and I think the staff will be able to answer questions on particular detail. Well, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for coming, Nathan, and talk to you soon. Thank you.
That already was the second episode of our podcast, and thank you for joining in. We will have a 40-minute podcast coming up pretty much every week now. One drive from the FM area to your lake home, we thought that will be good. We hope you enjoyed it. Happy Easter weekend.